Thank you again, everyone, for tuning in. We are here now to update from where we left off last week, talking about the criteria for reopening and those schools in counties that are eligible to reopen. So as we begin, I just want to start by saying thank you to all involved who have helped us come down from the peak that we had several weeks ago to a point where we can now start talking about the process of getting our kids back in schools, which we know is critically important. So thank you to all of those who have been practicing social distancing, wearing masks, and taking every precaution necessary to stop the spread of the virus. So to quickly give an update on criteria for eligibility for coming back to operate in-person learning, we've established a high bar for making sure that the public health conditions are in place, the academic conditions are in place, and the safety and support plans are in place for every district that is bringing students back into buildings. So we're going to talk today about those districts that are eligible to participate in-person learning in the hybrid model for elementary school students after Labor Day. Those who are in a green zone county, and we're going to have Dr. Scrace be able to talk through where we are on our updated data. And also those who have had a reentry plan approved by the Public Education Department, and those who have all of the safety procedures and precautions and materials on hand to be ready to begin in-person learning as we get into next week. So I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Scrace, who will lead us off by giving us an update as to where we are with regard to the latest data across the state. So Dr. Scrace, please go ahead and I can advance the slides if you just let me know when you're ready.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Ryan. I just want to actually take a minute before I get going to say how impressed I am with all the work you and your team, the governor's team, have been doing to reopen schools this past week. There's an enormous amount of detail that needs to be addressed. And I'm amazed. It's incredible how much work you all have done to get things ready and set things up. That being said, I want to go to this map, which tells us how we're doing as a state by county. Now, some of you may have seen this before. We've been using this map actually in DOH for the past 7 or 8 weeks to figure out where we want to do more testing. So we've been pushing testing more toward red counties. Also in the past 3 weeks, we've been using this map to determine which counties are safe to reopen nursing homes. Those are yellow, those that are green, and then which ones aren't, and those are the other colors, orange and yellow and red. There have been some changes, but if we could go to the next slide, I'll start there and we'll come back to the map in just a second. But this is how we plot out this data. And we have made a little bit of a change and swapped out orange and yellow. And so we'll get more to you on that next week. It doesn't matter for the purposes of this discussion. But on the bottom of the graph, you can see we've plotted every county in terms of the number of cases per 100,000 per day. And so you know we're taking a 14-day average. So this is the past 14 days. The other thing is, if you're keeping a spreadsheet of your own at home, I was very surprised to learn how many people do keep a spreadsheet at home. The numbers that are in the press release are different slightly from what we use to calculate this number. We adjust, so in the press release, we announce a new case based on the day we get the lab report and call the patient to confirm that that's their lab test and let them know they have COVID. So those are the cases that go in the press release. For this calculation, we actually assign each of those new positive tests to the day they were actually drawn, to the day the swab was taken. And that gives us a more accurate trend and curve and takes away any variation. You know, we have labs that turn these around in a day or two, which are mainly the New Mexico labs, and then labs outside of New Mexico that can take 14 days. So maybe an unnecessary detail, but I just wanted to let you know that. So we would look at the average number of cases per day for the past 14 days, divided by, and we adjust that for 100,000 people in the population. So if there were 8 cases a day for the past 14 days and a county had 100,000 population, their number would be 8. If they had 200,000 population and 8 cases a day, that number would be 4, and so on. And then the other axis, the y-axis, we've got a is the test positivity rate. And on that axis, you can see that there's a little trick to the math too. And I'm being careful to explain, because as you're looking at this, you're seeing some people that are very close to the line. And I want to make sure everybody understands what the numbers are we use. The test positivity rate, we take the number of confirmed cases and divide it by the total number of tests done in that county, again, averaged over the past 14 days. So like if Ryan and I both contracted COVID today, and I got 10 tests and Ryan only got one, all of them were positive, each of us would only be counted once. So that actually helps counties, because it tends to bring that test positivity rate down just a little bit if someone gets an additional test, although obviously we're not recommending that. So the good news is that almost every county, or the majority of them anyway, are in the green. We do have 6 counties in the red, 2 counties in the lower right box. And I think next week you're going to see that change to orange. There was a decision made this morning, and Doniana, you can see in the orange, that's going to change to yellow. Again, same exact consequences. And what's going on in those counties, if you're red, it means you don't meet either criteria. You're over 5% test positivity and you have more than 8 cases per 100,000. And that's red. Yellow, on this map today, you can see is your test positivity rate is good, but case rates are high. And on the orange today, Doniana is there, slightly high test positivity rate. So schools can reopen in green counties. There were 3 that moved, 2 that moved away from green, Doniana and McKinley, and Luna moved up from yellow to red over the past week. This is more recent data. So when we went last week, we had last week, and then this, we did 7 days this week, and now we're going to 14 days. We have 14 days. Last couple points. One is the 14 days is to stabilize this. It's really our intent. And what we really want is to get counties into the green, open schools, and keep them open. So we're not saying that if you just go, you're in the green, your schools are open, you go slightly over the line, that doesn't mean your schools are going to have to close again. We're going to work with you. Epidemiology is going to look at the cases. Are they related to the schools or not? I think while we don't have hard criteria for when a district would have to close, I think it would be obvious to everyone in the district. You would have heard about classrooms closing or wings of schools closing or whole schools closing beforehand because cases were present. And so we do want to work with the leadership in each county to get the word out to your counties about the fact that we're what your citizens can do to get your county back into the green and keep it there. And Secretary Stewart has already identified those things: wearing masks, 6-foot social distancing, hand washing, and respecting the public health orders very diligently. All of those things will reduce spread, and all of those things will eventually get counties back into the green. And so with that, I'm gonna turn it back to Secretary Stewart, but I'll stay on the line for questions later. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Scrantz. Appreciate your update there and appreciate the partnership with our public health officials to make sure that as we're reopening schools, we're doing it in places where the public health conditions really warrant doing so. So Dr. Scrantz, did you want to speak about smaller counties?
Yeah, I did want to say a couple more things about the line and smaller counties. So this is, we are making a 14-day average to work with the smaller counties. We don't want one case to take a county out of having their schools open. So we get that, for example, if you only have 10,000 people in your county and you had one case a day, every day for 14 days, that would, the calculation would go to 10. So we'll be very careful not to penalize counties once they get to green about that. And we're not, as I mentioned, we're not using the same criteria. I also want to mention about the line. because I imagine people from McKinley County and Doña Ana County are already calling or sending emails like, we're so close. Why can't we just open schools? And we had a very long discussion with that about that this morning, very intense, long discussion about it. Where we ended up is really what we've defined with 5% test positivity and eight cases per 100,000 is the conditions to safely reopen schools. And we came down at the end after the debate I mentioned with the feeling that the line is really the line. And so for McKinley County and for Doña Ana County, this report will be run again in 2 weeks. Work within your communities to do those things that lower case rates, get into the green. We'll be happy to work with you to achieve those goals. But I know that will be a question, and the answer to it's just going to be the line is the line, and we have to respect that so we can be consistent in ensuring parents and teachers and the broader community that we have safe conditions for reopening schools. Thank you, and that is those are my last comments. Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you, Dr. Scrace. So just a reminder, and we talked about this last week, requirements for being cleared to reenter, that New Mexico as a state, that we're on track with our statewide gating criteria. And that when we look at the district or school, it is in one of the green zone counties, as Dr. Scrace just laid out, with new daily cases and test positivity rates. And then at the public education department, we've been working with our school districts and charter schools around the state to make sure that we are setting a very high bar for what academics looks like, and both social and emotional support, academic support, and family engagement and communications in a pandemic model. And so having that reentry plan approved by the PED, and then the last hurdle that our districts are clearing. And again, we've been doing a lot of partnerships. I'll talk a little bit more about the partnerships to make sure that we're getting PPE and supplies out. But the district does certify and can show that it has the right safety and support plans in place to be able to safely make this work when students do reenter. So I'll leave the next set of slides up for a little bit as we go slide by slide. But this will show the districts that are in one of the green counties and do have a PED approved plan for reentry across the state. So again, I'll leave this up for just a few seconds this is page one, and I'll continue scrolling through for some other pages so people have a chance to locate their school or their district on the sheet. So then moving on to page two, these are the remainder of the school districts that are both, again, in the green zone and have had their plan approved through the public education department. Switching over now to the state charter schools, and again, there's a fairly long list of these. So these are state charter schools that are in a county that is in the green and has a PED approved plan. So again, I just want to reiterate here that when schools are eligible to reenter, they're in a county that is in the green zone. They have an approved reentry plan from the public education department. And then that last piece, and districts are certifying this today and tomorrow, doing a final count of the safety supplies and processes that they have on hand to make sure that we're able to bring students back in with very high degree of confidence that we have all the supports in place for our staff and for our students to return safely. So as we continue to get these final certifications, we'll continue with links from the main page or go directly to our Back to School NM page on the PED website to be able to find this updated list. Again, as we're getting into the green zone, having a reentry plan and certifying that we've got all of the equipment and processes in place to make sure that return is safe. So just a quick recap on the whole journey to get here. When we published our guidance way back in June, it was a result of a statewide committee that had come together over the course of a month that represented stakeholder groups from across the stakeholder spectrum to put out the published reentry guidance. And across June and July, we've engaged in ongoing communication across the state to make sure that we were communicating that out, producing an additional supplemental guidance document where more direction and more clarification specificity was needed. We published the assurance document, so the re-entry plans that I spoke about, and the districts and charter schools have been drafting and submitting those re-entry plans over the summer. And then we announced that beginning September 8th, the day after Labor Day, we would begin phasing in the hybrid model for those districts that met all of those criteria. And the Public Education Department will begin doing school site visits to continue providing ongoing support for the implementation of COVID-safe practices across the state. Speaking a little bit about what we're doing at the department systemically to make sure that we've got all the right systems in place to have a successful reentry, part of it is approving the plan. And then part of it, I want to thank all of our partners who have helped on the PPE. I'll talk a little bit more about this in a second, our rapid response and our plan enforcement. So to give you a little bit more detail on each of these, as we're approving the reentry plans, we look very deeply at their instructional models, the social and emotional learning supports, especially for our students who we know have had struggles engaging in the distance learning program. So we've stood up some great partnerships, both with through our our Engage New Mexico program, which provides additional support for any student who is not successfully participating in the remote program. And then also for our partnerships with our sister agencies. So I want to say a huge thank you to all the folks at CYFD who have been instrumental in helping us to establish and stand up additional supports for students, again, who are at risk and who need extra support during this time. And also our Indian Affairs Department, who is working with tribal communities to both assess plans that are in place for identifying those students and then be able to provide additional supports and resources to make sure that we are connecting with every single student who we know is also trying to make sure that they're able to succeed during this pandemic and that we're not just biding time until the pandemic moves forward. We've been collaborating with our Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Management and a number of other state agencies to both procure and distribute PPE all across the state. This week, we sent out another 500,000 masks across the state to our districts and charter schools. We're going to be sending out another 200,000 cloth masks here in the weeks to come. And throughout the month of September, we're going to receive an additional 1.1 million masks to send out across the state. And again, that's a collaboration with our federal Health and Human Services Department that is providing additional PPE. So a lot of work has gone into making sure that all of our schools are set up to make sure everybody has the masks that they need and that those staff who work in close contact assignments where they may have to have duties that include changing student diapers or changing feeding tubes, that we provide them with even more stringent PPE requirements so that we can make sure everybody has a safe environment and the materials they need to contain the spread of the virus. Through rapid response system and partnerships with DOH, and other agencies across the state, we're excited to be able to make additional testing resources available to our educators across the state. So we'll have a surveillance testing program that is in operation for all staff across the state, where they'll have access to be able to get tested, and we'll be able to track and monitor proactively across the state as our students begin to return for the hybrid model elementary learning. We also have rapid response training protocols. And so we've trained over 500 leaders across the state on they're called our COVID-19 points of contact in each of our districts and in each of our charter schools. And as I mentioned before, PPE is something that we've taken very seriously. We know that our districts have invested a significant amount of money, especially through CARES Act and through some of their operational dollars on PPE. We have supplemented with additional resources that we've been able to procure both through state funds and through federal funds and through use of our partnerships with FEMA. And we will be reporting these cases and what's happening in schools relative to the virus on a daily basis and making that available on our website so that those who are interested can stay up to date on the measures that we're taking and what the situation is relative to cases in schools. We've also worked across agencies around enforcement and complaints. So I want to thank OSHA and DOH for being strong partners to make sure that we have a strong system in place to make sure that COVID safe practices are happening and that every student and every educator and every parent can know with confidence that we do have systems in place to make sure that all the practices that we've outlined in our guidance are being adhered to across the state. And we do have our anonymous reporting tool now available. It's on the PED website. So you can go in if you have a concern. Well, we want to make sure that we know about them and we can correct any concerns very quickly and proactively. Additional resources I just want to point people to as we get into this time. If you have health-related inquiries, we encourage you to reach out to our Department of Health through the inquiry line and make sure you're getting the right kinds of supports and advice you need. We also want to make sure that folks are aware of our NM Connect app. It's available for download. You can go on the whether you have an iPhone or an Android device, you can go on, download that app. It will connect you to health services across the state. And in addition, our crisis line, you can see down below if you are someone who is in need of immediate support, don't think that you have to go it alone. Please do reach out to our crisis line. And I want to thank another partnership with our Early Childhood Education and Care Department, helping to stand up additional child care resources. So if you're out there and you need support around child care, please do call the resource and referral line so that we can help get you connected to resources in your area. So to reiterate something that we talked about last week, in the case of a confirmed case, we will have, depending on the circumstances of the case, a closure, either limited to an individual class if the closure is contained just within that classroom. If it's contained to a specific part of a building and there are multiple cases, then we would close the classrooms in that particular wing or area of the building, and the staff and students in those areas would participate in the remote learning program for that 14 days. And if we see cases that are spreading across a school building, then we will close the school building. And again, all students and staff in that building will participate in the remote learning program for 14 days. And the Public Education Department will very quickly respond and work with the school to make sure that we're identifying those individuals and putting the systems in place for a seamless closure and then reopening to the building when that time is appropriate. So a couple key points I just want to reiterate here. We've talked about this for a very long time. We've been anxiously awaiting the point where we can get back into schools, where the public health conditions and the systems that we've put in place to support those conditions are in place. We're taking a very deliberate approach to this because we know that we don't want to be in a situation where we're seeing big outbreaks, where we're seeing some of the issues that have happened elsewhere. So New Mexico is taking a very deliberate approach to this. We know that there's no substitute for in-person learning. And we've done a lot to strengthen the online programs this year, make them more robust. But we certainly know that so many of our students need to be in those buildings. Our educators need to be in the buildings connecting directly with students. So we're working hard to get there in a safe and responsible manner. And we're making sure that we've got the academic plans and the safety plans and supplies ready to go so that can be successful and people can look toward New Mexico as a model for how you do this smartly, responsibly, and in a way that allows you to keep your school districts open. I just want to reiterate that the Public Education Department is not mandating that any school district has to return. We know that across the state, across every community, public health conditions are different. We know that the capacity to make sure that you're able to execute is different. And so that is a local decision that can be made by the local school district and the local board when it is time for that decision to be made for when students want to return. I also want to reiterate that in addition to the reentry plan and the assurances that we have to make sure that schools can safely implement, the Public Education Department's teaming with our fire marshal, our National Guard, our local fire units to be available to provide on-site guidance and support to make sure that schools have everything that they can possibly need to ensure implementation of COVID-safe practices, and so that our students and our educators can make sure that that the state is leaving no stone unturned to make sure that everybody is able to confidently feel that they are safe and secure, and all reasonable precautions are being made to make sure that the entry is successful and that we are containing the spread of the virus. It's going to take a village for us to do this. We know that we've seen spikes in this virus before. Labor Day is coming, and we saw spikes around Memorial Day. We saw spikes around 4th of July. So it takes everybody's effort to make sure that our kids get to come back into school, into a safe environment where the virus is not spreading in our communities. So I really want to reiterate, and I know Dr. Scrace would as well, that we practice our social distancing, washing hands, wearing masks, disinfecting high touch surfaces, and encouraging our neighbors to do the same, and avoiding large groups so that we can get our kids back, keep our kids back in school safely, keep our schools open, and really show the nation how we make this work. So it's going to take everybody together to do it. The superintendents, the charter school leaders, the principals, the teachers, the food service workers, the social workers, the custodians, everybody involved in the school for the last 6 months has been putting enormous work into both standing up our remote programs and also preparing for a safe return to reentry. And so I want to thank everybody involved who's done that. I want to thank the staff of the Public Education Department who's put in countless hours to make this happen. And I want everyone to know that if we're all doing this together and taking all these precautions, we can do this, reopen our school safely, and have a successful return to the classroom. So with that, I will stop the share and open it up for questions.
Thank you, Secretary Stewart. Dr. Scrace, you had something?
Yeah, before you take a question, Ryan, I wanted to thank Brianna Henley for getting the website up and online. And I just wanted to show everybody who's watching how to get to it. It'll just take a second. And so you're familiar, hopefully, with the DOH website, cv.nmhealth.org. And if you go up, oh goodness, what happened? Hold on, I'm gonna do it this way. There will be a link about data here, and it takes you to here. I don't know what happened there. The link was there a minute ago, but anyway, this is our normal map where you can look at any county. You'll notice now if we hover over McKinley County and click, it zooms in and says it will tell you the status of both average daily cases, which is correct, 8 or more, and test positivity is under 5%. And it gives you those exact numbers. So this is updated twice a month, and we do it on a Wednesday night. And so we'll update the map early on Thursday morning. So anybody who wants to see where their county is or other counties are, can just go here and click. And so you start at this. Oh, here it is. You start here at the home website, and then you click on data dashboard in the purple there, and that will take you to the map. So that's going to be available now online. And I'm sure that the medical advisory team and PED and others will have a prominent link on their site to take you there as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Chris.
Thank you, doctors. The first question is from Cedar Atanasio of the Associated Press. Secretary Stewart, what schools, if any, do you expect to be in person next week? What kind of schools have wanted to start next week in person? And what are the common traits of their plans approved by the PED?
Cedar, thank you for the question. Again, there are it's a local decision around when students will come back. So that varies a little bit district to district. And I know some districts are still making that decision. So we'll have more firm numbers as we continue to contact all of the schools and districts around the state, both today and tomorrow. I think commonalities around the plans that they've submitted, there were three big buckets that we looked at: the instructional, social, emotional, and family engagement. And the biggest commonality among those that got approved are that whether we have to be in a hybrid model or remote model or full reentry, they had thought through what the elements were going to be in place to successfully operate in any of those areas. So we know that flexibility is going to have to be the name of the game as we continue to fight this virus, and we see surges and we see the virus conditions continue to fall as they have been. So they've had plans that have spanned all three of those areas. And then in addition, we've made sure that they're also thinking about how do the communications systems are going to work with families and community in general, but especially if there is a confirmed case, so that they can get information out quickly and get people the quarantine advice and the closure advice that they need.
Thank you, Secretary Stewart. I'm going to attempt to unmute Tommy Lopez. Tommy, go ahead.
Hi guys, can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Great. Thank you, Secretary Stewart, and everyone for taking questions today. I'd like to ask you about the teacher shortage in our state and how we're doing with it. Where do you guys see the situation now? Is our state improving with recruiting new teachers? Are there new efforts to recruit new teachers? And is there any worry that as some teachers are asked to go back in person with students, that some may retire or quit for health concerns, for reasons regarding health concerns that they may not want to go back? Thank you.
Thank you, Tommy. So everyone knows that getting more qualified teachers into the classroom is a huge priority. There's a shortage here in New Mexico and also nationally. And I think one of the things that we were excited about from the data last year was that we significantly decreased the number of vacant classrooms that we had across the state, which was a really good sign. And I think points to some of the efforts that have been made from the governor to really reemphasize the priorities around teaching, continue to push for higher compensation salaries and better working conditions, and professionalizing the teaching force. Some of the efforts that, actually I should say before I go on to that, we'll get more updated data typically toward the end of October or November on the preceding year. We have a partnership with New Mexico State that continues to study the teacher shortage and how it's impacted. So we'll have more updated data on that in the months to come. But when we look right now at the teacher retirement numbers, they're actually down currently from what they typically have been in the past few years. But we certainly know that there is a high degree of concern among educators out there about the return to the classroom. And so when you hear me talk about things like the mask requirements and getting more PPE out, about being able to partner with folks like the fire departments and the fire marshal around supporting the implementation of COVID safe practices, around being able to provide all of these assurances that every measure is being taken to ensure safety, we take that responsibility incredibly seriously, because we certainly do know that concern is out there. We have put in place a system to make sure that there is a exemption for staff who are identified as high risk by the CDC, so that those staff members receive the option to have a virtual assignment if they should so choose. We're trying to put everything in place that we can to make sure that folks feel safe.
Thank you very much, Secretary Stewart. We have a follow-up question from Cedar with the AP. Cedar, please go ahead.
Hi, Secretary. Thanks for doing this, and thanks for taking the follow-up. The reason I was asking about if there's any schools that we expect to start next week is so many have said that they won't be doing in-person at all through the rest of the semester, or at least for a few more weeks. And I was just curious if there's kind of a standout of someone who really expects to open next week, or at least who the first schools might be, and what those positive traits are.
Cedar, your audio is going a little bit in and out there. I think you asked if there was a standout that we know is going to open up for next week. Was that your question?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Cedar, we'll have more hard data for you on that for all the schools who are planning to open up next week as we do this final assurances with everybody. And we've been directly connecting with every single superintendent and charter school leader around the state on that particular issue. As you know, it is very fluid. So we'll have more information likely by the close of business tomorrow on the specifics of what each district and school's plans are.
Thank you.
Thank you, Secretary Stewart. Next, we have Patrick Hayes from KOB4. Patrick, go ahead.
Thank you for taking the question. I was wondering what data did the state use to decide what public schools or that public schools can reopen at a higher rate than the private schools?
Thanks for your question, Patrick. And Dr. Scrace, I'll let you weigh in on this question as well, if you want to talk about data. When we've talked about public schools versus private schools, the core data around safety reopening in general, I think, is the gating criteria, as Dr. Scrace has laid them out, to make sure that the public health conditions are right. We know that there's always been an oversight difference between the public and the private schools, with the private schools falling more when we think about the COVID safe practices into that bucket, similar to some of the other businesses. So I'll let Dr. Scrace, if you want to weigh in on some of the thinking about the kind of overall data gating criteria pieces for that.
Yeah, and I'm not, things change and things are fluid. And so I think there is a general intention to align criteria for all kinds of schools. So that being said, this is really interesting. The modeling team of the medical advisory team has spent really almost the whole summer focused on modeling school reopening. And the governor has been involved and suggested scenarios. We looked at five different scenarios. And it's interesting because in early June, it looked really good for school reopening in August. And then we had our Memorial Day, 4th of July, giant increase in cases, up to 325 cases per day. And we redid the modeling at the end of July and it looked terrible. And there was no area of the state that if you reopen schools wouldn't have a sharp and steady uptick in cases. In some areas, 100, 200 extra cases a day. So, and then of course, because we're here today, near the end of August, we redid the modeling again when case counts had come back down. And for most areas, things look good. We drilled down individual counties. We found that there was variation. And the main thing we learned, and I think this is a lesson we'll carry forward here in New Mexico through the rest of the pandemic, is how a reopening of anything is gonna go, schools or almost anything else, depends on how they're going right now in the community. And that's why we're placing this emphasis on the green and under 5% test positivity and less than 8 cases per 100,000. I could go into a lot of detail about where we got the 5%, where we got the 8 cases per 100,000, a lot of discussion and debate about those things. And as I said earlier, we've been using those for directing testing efforts for six weeks or more, using it for nursing home visitation for a few weeks or more. And it also, those numbers tie directly into the gating criteria for the entire state. And so a lot of research, a lot of modeling, a lot of people. I can't talk about this without recognizing Los Alamos National Labs and Presbyterian, who've done a ton of work on the modeling. But we think it's science-based. And one last thing, I think most people feel a little nervous just having read the newspapers over the past 3 weeks about what we've seen in Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Oklahoma, Indiana. They reopened schools and then within a day or two or five, were quarantining thousands of students and closing schools back down. And all I have to say about that is none of those states were in a place even close to meeting the state of New Mexico's gating criteria. They had case counts 4 or 5 times higher than where we are at now in New Mexico. And they had test positivity rates in some cases 3 and 4 times higher. So had they had the benefit of our gating criteria and our scientific community's advice, they would not have reopened schools. So I, like Secretary Stewart, am very optimistic that we have the ability to be successful here in the state doing it the way we're doing. And the model that we chose with the hybrid, remote plus distance learning is the minimal risk model to get started with. And then we can go from there after that.
Thank you both. Next we have Miranda from Las Cruces Sun News. Miranda, we should be able to hear you now.
Okay, hi, Secretary Stewart. I just wanted to ask, how has the prioritization of elementary school students played into reentry plan submissions and also their approval by PED? And then also, how many districts are pushing to bring middle school and high school students back as well, if any?
Thank you for the question, Miranda. And when we think about the elementary school students, we know that those are often the students where the remote program can be the hardest, both as they're learning to read, and then also when we think about the issues around attention span and being in front of a computer all day, we know that those students in particular are the ones that we wanted to make sure that we prioritize for getting back into the buildings, along with students with disabilities, I would also say, and making sure that we've got the ability to continue to provide their services per their IEPs. So we've continued to prioritize them. We've had small groups of pre-K through third grade students and students with disabilities who have already returned in a 5-to-1 ratio in some areas. And so we wanted to make sure that we kept them on the front burner. And also, you know, from a data perspective, and I know that this has changed quite a bit, and Dr. Scrace, I don't know if you wanna kind of weigh in on this. We've seen a lot come and go with regard to studies over the course of the pandemic about infection and spread rates amongst our youngest children. And you know, a lot of the data certainly showed that the severity of infection, there were differences that were seen, and there's been some debate about the level of spread. I'll let Dr. Scrace, if you want to comment on that.
Yeah, I do. I have two things, Secretary Stewart. Number one is we started out, if you remember, the national experts said children don't even get this disease and they can't spread it, and in March, New Mexico just completely rejected that hypothesis, and that has served us well, not buying into that. Also, we've been testing kids from day one. Most states had not been doing that. So you may remember April or in May where we had higher rates of COVID in kids than other states. Well, now that they've tested kids, they're catching up. Secretary Stewart is exactly right. Probably kids aren't that different from adults, except that their illness, particularly that elementary school age group, seems to be milder. And so that's a decreased risk, number one. And the second thing is, though, that we built into the modeling, I've gotten a lot of questions, like what possible reason could you have for picking elementary school and not middle school and high school? And there is one. And it's that when we did the modeling, we looked at the social interaction patterns of children in those three school groups. Elementary school kids in general, not always, because there are other factors like childcare, but in general, come to school, go home, and in the time of COVID that we're in, don't have a ton of interaction with other individuals. Middle school students, more social, more likely to hang out after school or meet up at a place near the school after school. And then of course, high school students, very mobile, significant increase in interaction. And so all that was built into the modeling. And I think our governor decided to choose the the lowest risk age group and the lowest risk configuration of the hybrid school model that Secretary Stewart has decided. And I think that's a great place to start. Also, given all the fact that other schools have already opted out of teaching the whole of in-person learning for the whole semester, I think that we will be providing them evidence as a state about how we can do this and how we can make it successful that may cause every school district to reevaluate month to month as the data keeps coming out and our experience is shared. Thank you.
And Miranda, one additional thing I would say, with regard to your question about middle school and high school and how many districts have requested to bring them back, we don't have a formal process for making that request. We've been clear for a while now that we're going to start just with elementary. There have been kind of a few requests here and there, or inquiries, maybe I should say, is a better word, about would it be possible to bring middle and high school back, but it hasn't been a kind of a formal process around which we've collected data about number of requests.
Thank you. It looks like we have one follow-up question from Miranda, please.
Yes, thank you both so much for answering that last question. I also wanted to ask, are state government offices and NMPED planning to open up on September 8th as well?
Thanks for that question, Miranda. So we currently have staff who are at the physically at the Public Education Department, a small set of staff who the nature of their work requires an on-site presence. The significant majority of our staff are continuing to work remotely. It falls in line with the general way that we've approached the pandemic, I think across the government, especially with the Public Education Department, that all work, I shouldn't just say the Public Education Department, public schools generally, all work that can be done remotely should be done remotely in line with the public health order that's out there. So, of course, returning to in-person learning, we can't substitute in-person learning. If we're going to bring kids back, of course, we need people physically there. But those teachers who are in middle school and high school who are still remote, who are still in the remote learning model, again, will remain, continue to work from home. And then Public Education Department, similarly, everybody who needs to physically be there at the building will be. And then all who can do their work remotely will continue to do that.
Thank you, Secretary Stewart. Next, we're going to Shelby from the Albuquerque Journal. Go ahead, Shelby.
Sure. Hi, Secretary. I'm just curious, so the lists of schools and charters that are in the green, just to clarify, are those the schools that are eligible to go back, or they have committed to bringing students back?
That list of schools, and thank you for the clarification question, that list of schools, Shelby, is the list of schools that are eligible to go back. Whether and when a school ultimately chooses to come back is up to the local decision-making authority of that local school board or local charter governing council.
Thank you, Secretary. And Shelby, did you have a follow-up question?
I did. So just to clarify again, so the PED doesn't have a number of how many districts have committed to go back next week?
No, we're confirming that as, again, we get these last assurances around the safety and support materials that all the school districts and charter schools have in place. So we'll have more firm numbers on that after tomorrow once those final assurances have been submitted.
Can I ask another follow-up?
Go ahead, Shelby.
Sure. So is it that the PED doesn't have that number, or are families in these communities still waiting to hear if they're going to go back next week?
It's been very fluid, Shelby. So I'll give you an example. I had probably three different school districts reach out asking a similar type of question around communicating around their decision making that their boards are having. We know that there's been board meetings happening today, even who are also looking to make these kinds of decisions. So it's a really fluid and it's gone back and forth. We know Albuquerque made a decision pretty recently at their board meeting. So the number has changed day by day and sometimes even hour by hour. But we'll have as we continue to do these outreach on these final assurances, we'll get more final numbers based on board meetings again that are happening today other decisions that are being weighed. And Dr. Grace, it looks like you wanted to weigh in on this as well.
Yeah, I just want to mention, Shelby, that keep in mind that the data that governs whether schools have the option of reopening was released at the very beginning of this press conference. So schools are now going to be able to take that and know for sure where they stand and be able to make those decisions.
Thank you, doctors. Our next question comes from Sylvia in Senator Heinrich's office. Sylvia, you should be unmuted.
Well, thank you, Secretary. I was just wondering, there has been some, you sort of alluded to this earlier, that there is, that you guys are trying to get community resources to help students that need more help or that cannot thrive on a online only environment. And I'm wondering if there are some programs that you can talk about for community-based learning hubs, because I've seen that in other states and I haven't really heard about that here.
Yeah, and that's been a hot topic, kind of a whole industry that sprung up pretty quickly here during the pandemic, whether you call them learning hubs or pandemic pods or learning pods, where you've got small groups of students and families coming together with a teacher oftentimes that they've privately hired, or family members who are taking on that responsibility. Is that the sentiment that you're talking about?
Apologies, Sylvia. I can bring her back.
It's okay. That's okay, Katie. Assuming that it is, there's not a formal pod or learning hub system that's in place at the state. We have been in communication with a number of families and groups that have inquired about it and how that works kind of in the regulatory scheme with regard to homeschool. And so we've been trying to give out lots of information about homeschool requirements and how you register about that. But we don't have a formal learning pod system for the state.
Thank you, Secretary. Wondering also if you could speak to the learning loss that students may or may not have experienced over the summer in distance learning.
So, and this is a real, it's kind of a key reason why we talk about in-person learning and the importance of it. We certainly think that when we had to move very quickly in the spring to stand up these remote systems almost overnight, we know that they're not nearly as robust as they are now. But even now, there are still some challenges that happen, and it doesn't replace the experience of a teacher and a student in the presence of really rich, dynamic content and community in a classroom. And so we certainly think that learning loss can happen. I know that there's been a lot of reporting about the LFC's study estimating that learning loss might be a year. One of the challenges that we face is we weren't able, because of the pandemic, to administer the types of assessments that we normally would. That would be one important marker of being able to measure that. And so it is a little bit, it's difficult to quantify exactly what that is, but we certainly think that our students, as they are having to work remotely, it's not the same par as being in the classroom.
Thank you, Dr. Stewart. Final question, could you talk a little bit about the hotspots and connectivity support that's been offered across the state?
So broadband infrastructure is a huge challenge for the state. Depending on the measure that you're looking at, New Mexico typically has more families that are either unserved through broadband or underserved through broadband than most other states in the country. And so this has been a major challenge for the remote learning program. At the Public Education Department, we've tried to take a number of different initiatives. So we did distribute several million dollars worth of Chromebooks, wireless access points, and hotspots out into some of our most vulnerable communities, including out in Navajo Nation and some of our other tribal communities. We've also been working with the CARES Act money that we got from the federal government, and most of that money goes directly out to districts. We provided guidance and strongly encouraged districts to really use that money to make sure that they were taking every step possible to close the digital divide. So we know that there were over $40 million budgeted at the school district level to provide additional devices and hotspots that are out there. And we're in continuous communication with both our Department of Information Technology, the governor's office, identifying who are those students and where are those areas where even after all that investment, we still have holes, and trying to use the additional pot of money that we have from the CARES Act to find those families and get them those services. So we're actually meeting with a number of different providers tomorrow, and we're gonna continue to work with both the Department of Information Technology and UNM on the project to really map that all the way down to the student address so we can make proactive outreach to some of those students. We're not gonna be able to solve these broadband challenges overnight, but we do know that we're trying to put every resource that we can into that effort.
Thank you so much, Dr. Stewart and Dr. Scrace, for fielding those questions. Any final remarks from either of you to close us out today?
Dr. Scrace, any final ones from you? I'll give the final thoughts after you.
Yeah, sure. Wash your hands, wear a mask, stay 6 feet away from other people, avoid large gatherings, and please, particularly over Labor Day, keep it small. We've upped the maximum gathering size to 10, but doing those things actually will do more in red, yellow, and orange communities to get to the green than anything else. So they are tools we have. I encourage others to use them as well. I agree with Secretary Stewart that we've got a good shot at a reopening of schools that will improve education for kids and keep them safe at the same time. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Scrace. And I would just say in closing that we've worked as a state incredibly hard to get back to this point from where we were just a few weeks or a month ago. And that incredible hard work, that adherence to these guidelines means we get to talk about a safe reopening for schools. We get to re-enter schools in a way where we can look at our educators, our families, our students and say, we've put as many safeguards as we can in place. We're only doing this in the places where the test positivity rates and new daily case rates are low, and we're taking every possible precaution to contain the virus. And like I said in my presentation, it truly is going to take a village to do all of this, from the boards who have the important decision about when to bring students back after they become eligible, to the superintendents who are charged with executing this work. And again, I just want to say again that our school administrators have had many, many sleepless nights with a lot of planning to put this in place. So please thank your local superintendent and all of your principals. To our educators who have taken on the daunting task of creating a new instructional model through massive online learning at a scale that we've never done before, and who are now preparing to re-enter the classrooms. Make sure that you are please thanking your teachers who are out there who are taking this on. To all of the food service workers, the custodians, the social workers, the counselors, who have really taken on a very strong presence to make sure that our kids are really well loved and cared for to come back in. So there's a lot of thanks to go around for many of those individuals. And the piece that I will just want to reemphasize the most might be students, as you're coming back, families, as you're bringing them back, we all have a responsibility to make sure that the work we do is in line with the requirements and that we're taking all of those precautions to stay socially distanced. We know it's hard to wear your masks. Again, we know that it's new and different, but we've seen in early childhood that they can pull it off, to wash your hands regularly and do all of the things that allow us to have this opportunity to make it safe. So thank you everyone for all of that work. And we certainly look forward to being able to welcome our youngest children back for in-person learning. And with that, I think we can go ahead and close and wrap up the Zoom. Katie, any last words?
No, sir. Thank you so much for your time.
Okay. Thank you, everyone.